Hi, this is Alan Carrington again, and this is Between the Buttons, Day 2 of Ascolite 2010. And with me it's Honor Thomas. I'll call you Tom. Okay, everything in Australia gets shortened. Tom Reeves of the University of Georgia. Just love the way he talks. But Tom is one of the keynotes here. Tom, it's an honour to talk to you, man, but some of the things you said this morning had me very disturbed. Anyway, you talked about open learning requires open minds, and, man, I think that's one of our biggest challenges is to be open-minded about the future. Tell me, how do you see the future in this area of online education?
Alan, thank you for having me on this podcast. I go back and forth. Some days I'm feeling very optimistic about the future, frankly, and other days I'm very pessimistic. I started off using technology as a teacher in 1974, and frankly, I see way too many instances where technology is pushed into the educational environment without proper consideration for instructional design, for pedagogical dimensions, for the defining the teacher role, the student role. And that's one of my biggest frustrations, is that we're really not learning too much from what we have done in the past, and we seem to be repeating some of the same studies year after year every time a new technology comes out. I remember when it was going to be educational television that would revolutionize everything, and then it was going to be interactive video discs, and then CD-ROMs, and then DVDs, and today it's internet and iPads, and so we really continue to put the technology ahead of the pedagogy. On the other hand, I have seen, for example, at a conference like Ascolite, some really courageous and inspirational examples of how people are putting pedagogy first and then using the technology appropriately to serve the instructional design.
You spent a little time and brilliantly this morning talking about what the me generation, the next generation of learners. 15 years ago, they were talking about the Y generation. They've been talking about how the young people, the tomorrow's leaders, are changing. Where are we at? We've now got better research to say where we're at. But what are we going to do about it? Is there anything exciting on the horizon that you could try to put into a few sentences that says could be one of the major next breakthrough pedagogically? Nothing like technology to have a glitch, Tom. I'm not quite sure where that paused, but we'll pick it up anyway. The next generation of learners, what is there ahead of us that you can see because of your work in the cutting edge of all this, both here and in America? What do you see the most exciting thing happening as far as teaching and learning is concerned?
Well, you know, one of the things I'm excited about is the use of e-readers. One of the fundamental problems we have today is kids just aren't reading. The time that the average child spends reading in the home has declined. And this starts, of course, with the parents. The parents need to read to the children early on. But I think that as e-readers like the Kindle and the iPad and so forth become more ubiquitous, there are going to be opportunities for people to do more and better reading. I saw an editorial just the other day in the New York Times where someone was writing that they thought that the iPad was going to revolutionize their access to reading, the ability to, you know, be reading and then go to a reference right away to look up a word or some other train of thought that might develop. You can go explore that right away. It's a very powerful experience. I actually took an iPad home for a number of days recently. A friend of mine had and tried, you know, the reading myself, and I found it to be quite empowering. Unfortunately, I later found out that I have a pacemaker, and you're not supposed to have an iPad very close to your pacemaker, so I actually had to stop using it. But
Wow, I didn't know that. Okay, that's really interesting, actually. Because as a learning designer, I'm very interested, and as I mentioned to you off tape, so to speak, that the University of Adelaide is implementing a huge program of iPads. This whole question of reading, the whole question of being able to tie social networking into the book. I don't know if you're aware of that, but this thing called Inkling, I don't want to advertise, but this Inkling idea, which is an app on the iPad, its ability to be able to create social networking around the content, that's really exciting. So that you can not only, it's kind of like reading, having your textbook in Facebook at the same time. Now, that we need a lot of research on that. What else is there besides, not so much technologically based, but how do we get past, and this is not such a big question, but how do we get past this? You mentioned that thing about what's the sixth sense? What did you call it? It
was a sense of entitlement.
Entitlement, yeah. That's big in America. It's big in Australia too. But this whole idea that you can't, not even competition's good. What are they? Is that a trend, or is it they fighting against it? What's happening over there?
Yeah, it is definitely a trend, and it's like anything else. I think the debate will continue for a while about that, but I think people are beginning to become aware that, you know, competition's not such a bad thing, and recognition that some people have talents more than others have is not such a bad thing either. I think it's a good part of the self-esteem movement is that we recognize that everybody has potential and everybody has talent in some area.
Good stuff, yes.
But to say that, you're entitled to reward just for participation as opposed to, say, working hard and making some improvement and accomplishment, that is something that some folks are concerned about now and trying to improve.
Anything else as far as you talk about being open-minded? Are the administrators, the people in charge of education in our institutions, are they as open-minded as the teachers want them to be? Or are we getting support in that area, or is there still a long way to go?
Well, I guess it would vary a lot from institution to institution. As you mentioned, you have an inspirational leader at the University of Adelaide who seems to be to understand that technology alone is not the answer, but that teachers will need support and faculty development and so forth to help integrate the technology. But I think by and large, in this day of declining resources, there's going to be increased emphasis on return on investment. So people are going to be asking harder questions about, okay, if we put all this technology in, wire everything, wireless everywhere, is it really going to impact teaching and learning? And that is an open question. I think we need to do better research. I'm particularly interested in an approach called design-based research. I've written about this in a number of publications, currently writing a book with Jan Harrington and Susan McKinney under contract with Rutledge about how to do educational design research. The real benefit... I can give you it in a nutshell. Basically, the notion is, rather than trying to prove that, you know, iPad-based learning is better than classroom lectures, what you do is you take a serious problem, let's say the lack of information literacy among your students, and then figure out, okay, what's the best mix of pedagogical design, instructional design, teacher roles, student roles, technological affordances to address that, and you base that on sound theory. And then you go through multiple cycles of trial and collecting data to optimize that treatment and eventually achieve your goal, all the time also being trying to refine theory as well and identify design principles. But one of the most important aspects of educational design research, it's not researchers treating teachers and students as subjects, but having them be equal partners in the research. So it's a really practitioner-oriented, practitioner-driven type of inquiry.
Tell me, when one of the bottom lines to come out the end of that is going to be a dollar, have dollars on it. And so you say to yourself, we've got the best pedagogy, we've got the best approach, we've got the best technology, how are we going to pay for it? So one of the things, the keys to that surely will be to help the developers or the researchers in that model not get frustrated and start the other way around, saying this is all we get support for, this is therefore what we can afford to, and then try to work backwards. Is there any key to that, or just say stop thinking restrictions to the end?
Yeah, and I guess there we really have to look at how the money is being spent. Unfortunately, as I've seen reviews done in the U.S. for the National Science Foundation and organizations like the ARC in Australia, oftentimes it's the old guard who are deciding what gets funded. Yes. and what's considered an innovation. And so I think sometimes the haves continue to get the major resources, whereas some of the really creative, innovative people who don't have the track record yet are really struggling to break into that significant funding that they might need in order to further their research and development efforts.
I think what you're saying is don't give up.
Absolutely. Don't give up. There is hope. I'm a big believer in hope. I am a big supporter of President Barack Obama, and his motto was hope, and although he's struggling right now, 2 years into his office, I think there's still hope on the horizon, and that we will see better days ahead.
Thank you, Tom. I've been talking to Thomas Ree from University of Georgia. Just restate that book, because I think I'm about to buy it too.
What's the new book coming?
Oh, the new book is called, what is it called? We've gone through so many titles, but it's about educational design research. It'll be published by Routledge in June 2011, and the authors are Jan Harrington, Susan McKinney, who's from the University of Twente in the Netherlands, and myself.
Thank you, Thomas. I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
I hope that was okay.
That was okay. Yeah. Well,